So, it's my very great pleasure to introduce my good friend Dharmachari Ratnaprabha, a member of the Western Buddhist Order, who lives these days in west of London and works and teaches at our Buddhist Centre in Westbourne Grove sort of area. I've known this guy for about 30 years. I've lived with him at some points along the way, once in Norfolk with Sangharakshita, the founder of the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order. And I've been aware of him working in Cambridge and Norwich and at Padmaloka and at various places. He's been a busy member of our order, teaching, helping people to join our order, and so on. He's also a writer, wrote a book about Buddhism and the theory of evolution, and he has a scientific background, which I don't know whether this accounts for it, but he is an absolute fund of knowledge. He was really good to live with in the days before Google, when you were having an argument and didn't know how long the gestation period of an elephant is, or, you know, why did Saturn happen? He'd be your man. He knew everything, infallibly and always. So I don't know whether we're going to get his knowledge, his insight, his experience or whatever, but he's going to address us on a subject of absolute central concern to us all, and that we all eat. We wouldn't be here if we didn't. We might be Buddhists or not, but whatever else we are, we all eat. And Ratnaprabha is going to talk to us about the ethics of food, with a title which is In the Maw of the Beast. Is that close enough? It's close enough. In the Maw of the Beast. Ratnaprabha.
Thanks, Nagabodhi. Yes, I think it's maybe tempting to sort of deluge you with facts in this kind of era, isn't it? Whenever people talk about global warming and problems and ethics and what you should be doing and how you should be living, they'll tend to deluge you with facts. But I'll try and resist that temptation and just raise a few issues and just see what you think. I'd like to just raise the issues in a way, and I'd like to give you plenty of space to say what your own experience is in this area of the ethics of eating. The festival, these Buddhafield festivals always have a theme, and this year the theme is skillful living in a changing world. Skillful living in a changing, or the subtitle is skillful living in a changing world. And this word skillful is in a way the Buddhist word for ethical. And that's why it seemed quite a good idea to look at skillful living in a changing world in terms of our eating habits in terms of food. And I think one of the most positive things about Buddhist teachings, for me at least, is that it tells you can actually make a difference, that what you do does make a difference. It's also a challenging teaching because it says not only can you make a difference, but you will make a difference. The way you live, the way you act, what you decide to do does actually make a difference. In fact, it's all that makes a difference in the collective. It's humanity's decisions that make that turn the world into a human place and make it what it is. So what you do, how you live, has an impact. It has an impact, of course, on you, and this is karma. But what you do makes you who you are, in a way. But it also has an impact on other living beings as well, of course. And Buddhist ethics describes how to bring benefit to others through the way you live and through your behavior. How can we benefit others is relevant to our eating habits. But I'll talk about particularly, I think, the issue of animals and the effect on animals of our eating habits. But of course there are many much broader impacts that our eating has on the environment, and every decision you make does have an impact. It does make a difference, as I'm sure you realize. So there are these very broad ethical implications. And I'll just mention those very briefly. But just see what you think and bring in your own knowledge, bring in your own experience by all means. I'll give you some space for that, I hope. I'll try and keep this relatively short. As I was thinking about the talk, I was talking to a close friend of mine. And he loves eating meat. He loves meat. He just finds it so delicious, you know, that crackling and the strong flavours and the texture of it, something to really get your teeth into. So what happens is his friends bring him things they find. They bring him pheasants and rabbits that have been run over in the road to eat. But he's actually otherwise a strict vegetarian. He'd never buy meat. He is a Buddhist. Once he was up in Scotland and he found a seal on the beach that had been shot by the salmon fishermen who run the fisheries. And so he built a fire and roasted it and ate it. And another chap I knew was a very, very keen fisherman. But he was also, one of these people that really couldn't hurt a fly. He was so meek and mild. He also was a vegetarian. But he just could not resist the joy of fishing, the sense of outwitting the fish, of sort of challenging the most intelligent of bream and chub and getting them to take the bait. But the idea of them suffering any pain almost made him weep in sympathy. He was sort of so soft-hearted. And he tried various ways. If he hooked a fish, you imagine you hook a fish and the barb goes through the lip or gets stuck in the throat. He thought, oh, this is horrible, this is so terrible. And he felt it struggling as he was taking it out. He always threw the fish back. But after a while, he couldn't even bring himself to use a barbed hook. And what he decided to do was put some bait on the end of a line, and he'd say, well, if I can get the fish to take the bait, I'll regard that as victory. I've won. I've beat the fish. So he loved fish. And, well, I don't know about loving fish, actually. I've not quite managed to do that. I did have some goldfish once. Has anyone got goldfish? I mean, do you have a personal relationship with your goldfish, would you say, if you have a fish? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, great. So it is possible, isn't it? But I think a lot of people are friends with animals. I think a lot of people do have a pet or a farm animal that they love to meet. Animals they get to know personally, maybe the little birds that build a nest outside your window, and you really follow their progress, don't you? You imagine how they're getting on in there, and then the little ones emerge and so on, and it's very exciting. Yes, so have people got that? Have you got like a favourite animal that you can relate to? It's nice if you can, isn't it? In the city it's very difficult to keep animals or to look after them. So I want to make some points, as I say, about the ethics of what we eat, how we eat. And a lot of things you can say on all sorts of levels. But I wanted to start with that basic feeling of connection. Because animals are living beings, they are aware beings as we are, and you can get to know them. I think you can develop a personal relationship with animals. The sense of the individual animal, the sense of getting to know its own personality, its preferences, its little ways, its little habits, all the fears that animals have, the enjoyments that they have. Perhaps it's incredibly greedy and rather sweet for that. Maybe it's rather mischievous. Maybe it's stupid and rather endearing in its stupidity. And for me, Buddhism is about connections. It's about those personal connections are not incidental. They're not just something on the side. They are what is really important. The connections that we make with other people, but also the connections that we make with animals as well. So I think we should start by thinking of those individual animals and also of individual people. And when we look at the effects we're having, we can think of it in those, as it were, personal terms. So I would say that the decision, for example, to be a vegetarian, is a decision primarily to do with the suffering and the dying animals. Because for them, if they are suffering, if they are dying, it's something intensely real. So you're not becoming a vegetarian, not avoiding meat for your own sake. Maybe some people do that. Maybe that's even the commonest reason for it, for the sake of health and so on. But it seems to me that the important reason is for the sake of those animals who suffer and die. There are good selfish reasons for a vegetarian diet, but there may also be, of course, selfish reasons against a vegetarian diet. So if you just think of it in those terms, you may not decide to do that. So what Buddhism would say is, don't cause harm. Don't cause harm, even if it's in your own interests to do so. So imagine starting from that viewpoint, avoiding causing harm, even if it's in your own interests to do so. Even if you fancy it, or even if you think it'll benefit you. And there's an American writer on Buddhism who says about eating meat, this is quite a strong statement, so you know, I'm not saying I agree with it, but let's listen to this. As to eating meat, we know the only way we can obtain it is for an animal to be killed. Therefore, when we eat meat, it's our intent that an innocent animal should die to satisfy our addiction to flesh. And that underlying intention, no matter how well hidden behind the smokescreen of rationalizations, will block the growth of compassion and will create negative karma. That's a guy called Norm Phelps. So you can think of why this is. I mean, again, I don't want to give you all the background facts, but you can imagine it's not very nice to be dragged into a slaughterhouse and killed. And the animal does know what's happening. They know full well what's going on. The terror and the pain, the panic is intense in this circumstance. And this slaughter is not just something that just happens occasionally. It happens a lot. Apparently, worldwide, every year, 48 billion animals are killed for fabric and food. It's very impossible really to get one's head around that number, isn't it? But this is not just over a long period of time, this is every year 48,000 million animals are killed because human beings want their meat or want their leather or whatever. And that's land animals. But nobody's ever counted the number of fish. They know the rough tonnage of fish, and it's many, many millions of tons, of course. Most of those 48 billion, by the way, are poultry. The great majority are chickens and ducks and turkeys and geese. Now, here we are in England. Are we better? Maybe we're better. You know, we're usually much nicer people in England than all those foreigners elsewhere, aren't we? But actually not in this case. Proportionately speaking, because in the poorer countries of the world, they can't afford to eat meat, or they're too sensible to eat a lot of meat, it means that actually proportionately speaking, here in Europe, that 48 billion compared with the population of the world is a much higher proportion. The number per person is much higher. So for myself, this is the kind of thing I was thinking of when I was a student, and I left home, and I can remember I was starting to enjoy fending for myself, and there were four of us living together at the time, and we were learning, as you do when you're 18, we were learning and working out how to cook fancy things we could impress each other with. It was really enjoyable. And all my childhood I'd really hated fish, and I can remember at this time I must train myself to cook fish in a way that I can really enjoy it, and nice dishes of meat and all that kind of thing. But at the same time, it was gradually dawning on me, and one of the four people I was living with, that we actually didn't have to eat the flesh of animals. We didn't need to do that. And the thought came as a sort of an intense relief. I don't think it had quite occurred to me before that I didn't have to do this. And two of us got together and said, let's try it. This is before I was a Buddhist. Let's try it. And we started learning vegetarian dishes as well. And it was very nice because the people we were living with were quite happy with that. They said, oh, yeah, that's fine. We'll do that. We'll eat vegetarian. We'll cook vegetarian for you. And I think I'd always felt rather uneasy about eating flesh. Most of it I'd never really enjoyed very much anyway. And I found I was very happy with the vegetarian diet. Thank goodness for that, I thought. That's great. And I enjoyed my eating more, I think. I enjoyed my food more. Because I had that clearer, let's say, a clearer conscience. And so this was an ethical decision. Now, much later on, I moved into a Buddhist retreat center where all the food there was vegan. So I thought, oh, well, why not? Why not take the next step? And that was about 13 years ago. And so I do feel myself, after 33 years of being vegetarian and 13 years of being vegan, my health seems to be fine. I've got plenty of energy. I haven't had any problems. It just seems to be a question of just being reasonably careful, having a varied diet, making sure you get enough protein and so on. And you may say, well, why vegan? You know, vegetarianism is hard enough, why vegan? And you may think that milk and eggs, in a way, are freely available without causing any suffering. But unfortunately, that's not true, because for milk and cheese and so on, the cow has to be made pregnant every year. And every year a calf is taken away from her, causing great distress, and is usually just simply killed or raised to a certain degree and then killed, or just occasionally, you know, one calf in the life of every cow is kept to become another dairy cow. And there is intensive suffering involved in dairy farming. Maybe, you know, in some ways actually it's worse, because at least the beef cattle normally are allowed to run free in the fields, because to get good beef they've got to get plenty of exercise and eat good grass. But the dairy cattle usually, I'm afraid, are kept indoors, and they are pumped, they're sort of bred and treated so that they'll produce a maximum amount of milk, and they die very young, and they tend to have mastitis and so on. And there's also with egg production as well. You've got, well, okay, free-range eggs sounds quite nice, but only 16% of eggs are free-range in this country. Most of the egg product that you eat in all sorts of food doesn't come from free-range eggs. Even if they're free-range, it just means they have a little area outside they're allowed to go into, and most of them don't bother. They don't take advantage of it, and they are sitting in their barns. 16,000 chickens usually in a barn. Living in very crowded conditions. That's free range. I won't tell you what the battery chickens are like. So, going vegan probably will add 10 years to your life, if that's any recommendation. Cancer and heart disease risks are much reduced. The only thing you need to watch for is probably taking some B12, vitamin B12 supplement. So on top of this ethical side of the treatment of animals, there's also, of course, the environmental impact of the meat industry. And again, it's good just to give you a few figures. I'll try and keep them down. You can find all this stuff in books, of course. But beef takes at least 10 times the resources and 50 times the water of the same amount of vegetable protein. So if you're looking at the impact of farming, it's much, much more aggressive, the impact on the environment from meat production. It takes much, much more land, and of course a lot of that land is being taken away from forests. And if it's not being taken away direct for the cattle, it's being taken away to grow the feed that is fed to the cattle that are kept indoors or during the winter. And slurry, you know, the waste from intensive farming causes really terrible pollution. It's one of the main pollution problems that we have. But these are all relatively insignificant compared with the impact on greenhouse emissions. Because meat production generates enormous amounts of methane, which is a very potent greenhouse gas, much more potent than carbon dioxide. And it also generates a huge amount of carbon dioxide. And apparently, the single most effective thing that the majority of people could do to prevent global warming would be to give up animal products. So, for example, if you're a big car user and also a meat eater, then you'll have more effect by giving up the meat than by giving up the car. Though, of course, it's fantastic to do both of these things. So, it's not that your eating is automatically unproblematic because you avoid animal products. Of course not. There are many other ethical implications involved in eating. In a way, it's not you can never sort it out. I mean, this is quite important to realize. It's as if you get to the self-righteous stage where you think, I'm this really ethical person. I'm doing this, I'm doing this, and I'm doing this. Now I don't have to worry about it. It's never like that. We're always having an impact. We're always causing a certain amount of damage. And we can always take another step. So I think the important thing is just to decide on the next step you're going to take. Not to feel there's a black and white. There are some people who are wicked flesh eaters, and there are these other people who are incredibly virtuous vegetarians. It's not like that at all, of course. There are many ways we can make a step, and I think it's really valuable to see ethics as being a continuous practice. Not something awful, but something really interesting to do. And say, wow, I'm discovering more and more the different impacts I have on the world and on my fellow creatures and on the people around me and on myself. And I'm just looking at those impacts and trying to decide what I can do to make my life a little bit less harmful and even more beneficial. So it seems to me that looking at the ethics of what we eat is not really a Buddhist issue. It's a humanitarian issue. It's a human issue. It's just saying, what are the effects of the way that I live? What are the effects of the way that I nourish myself? And the way that I gratify myself as well, that I gain my pleasure. And could I make a decision, at least maybe to cut down on the animal products that I use, knowing, being quite confident that if I do so, that will have really good beneficial effects. So it's not a Buddhist issue, but it is an issue for Buddhists, it seems to me. So having taken on Buddhist ethics, it becomes an even bigger imperative. Once you've made that decision, in a way you've simplified things once again, and you've taken a decision to look at the ethical consequences of, among other things, your diet. And I'd to go back again to those individual animals, the animals that we know, and extending from that into the animals that we don't know. They're real, those animals, and every day they're suffering and dying. So I'm moving a little bit now onto from the general ethics of eating onto looking at how Buddhism approaches it. So the Dhammapada is one of the earliest Buddhist texts, and it says, the Buddha says in the Dhammapada, all living beings are terrified of punishment. All fear death. To all, life is dear. Making comparison of others with oneself, one should neither kill nor cause to kill. All living beings are terrified of punishment. All fear death. To all, life is dear. Making comparison of others with oneself, one should neither kill nor cause to kill. So comparing yourself with an animal could be a very sentimental thing. They're not like us, of course. Is it possible to do that? Is it possible to empathize with an animal? I think it is possible in a realistic and genuine way to do that, comparing oneself with others. And the Dhammapada goes on. Whoever torments creatures desirous of happiness, he himself thereafter seeking happiness will not obtain happiness. Whoever does not torment creatures desirous of happiness, he himself thereafter seeking happiness will obtain happiness. They're very simple little statements in the Dhammapada, aren't they? Very beautiful in their purity, in a sense. Maybe oversimplified. I'll be interested to see what you think. And out of all this comes the first precept, the first ethical precept in Buddhism, the first and most important precept. And out of that precept comes all other Buddhist ethics. And the first precept is about acting with loving kindness. And this is what it says you need to avoid doing in order to act with loving kindness. So I'll just give you the literal translation of the precept. I undertake the principle of training of abstaining from harming living beings. So this is what, in a way, if you're a Buddhist, you'll take that on. You'll say this. You'll probably say it every day. You'll try and remind yourself of it. I undertake the principle of training of abstaining from harming living beings. Simply not causing any harm as far as you can. And the word for living beings here, by the way, is Panati. And this comes from the Sanskrit word prana. Does anyone know what prana means? Breath. In prana means breath. So panati means a taker of breath. So as we breathe, we can feel a connection. We can feel the rhythm of breathing that we share with all animals, even with fish, who after all breathe water. So this is what's being talked about, is breathers. That's the way that they... And elsewhere it says sentient beings. In other words, those beings that have senses, that are able, in other words, to suffer and to feel pleasure. And Buddhism insists that all sentient beings are equally entitled to compassion. It doesn't say that some beings are more entitled to compassion than others. It says all beings are entitled to compassion. They can be made to suffer, or they can have their suffering alleviated. They want to live. They don't want to die. So if there's a genuine choice, fair enough, you might decide to save a human being at the expense of an animal. You know, one can sort of always think up hypothetical situations where this was the case. Well, fair enough. But it's very rarely that you really have to make a choice between a human being and an animal. Nevertheless, despite this, a lot of Buddhists do eat meat, which is always a bit of a conundrum to vegetarians that come into Buddhism, thinking, oh wow, at last, a religion that is vegetarian. And some of them say different things about this. Some of them will admit, well, this is simply a weakness that I've got. But sometimes they give all sorts of excuses, and we can talk about some of those if you like. I shouldn't say that, it's rather a value judgment. Maybe they're valid excuses. So if you are a Buddhist and you feel it's fine to eat meat, I'd be interested to hear what you think at the end of the talk. And there's even a myth that the Buddha himself was a meat eater, or allowed meat eating. Now, some of the early texts do say that he permitted his monks to eat meat if, and this is a really big if, it was part of the donation of food that was put in the monk's alms bowl, so long as they had absolutely no suspicion that it was deliberately obtained for them. So, no way, if someone had gone down the supermarket and bought some steaks and stuffed it, cook them and stuff them in the arms, you weren't allowed to accept it. But if it was simply that the householder had some leftovers, they were not a vegetarian, they're very generously looking after the monk, you couldn't say, no, I'm not accepting it, it's got a bit of ham in it. You know, you couldn't do that if you were a monk. But you must admit, this is a very minor let-out clause, and in some of the other Buddhist texts seem to imply that this was not actually allowed, was not a let-out clause. There's a bit of dispute about it. It's a minor exception to vegetarianism. It's just saying that if you're living by going from door to door accepting donated food, then you shouldn't pick and choose amongst the leftovers that you're given. And according to the same American writer, Norm Phelps, with the possible exception of meat innocently given to monks on the alms round that I just mentioned, he says, both sets of scriptures, in other words, the Mahayana and the Hinayana scriptures, agree that the Buddha forbade his disciples to eat meat. The Buddha's message to the modern world about meat is simple: do not eat it. And there's at least one tradition going back to the time of the Buddha which insists on complete vegetarianism under all circumstances. As always in Buddhism, there are different strands of tradition. Now, I'm going to open this up, I think, in a minute, to make sure there's a bit of time for discussion. But before that, I wanted to mention one particular Tibetan hero of mine, whose name is Chattel Rinpoche, also known as Chettle Sangha Dorje. Has anyone heard of Chettle Sangha Dorje, Chattel Rinpoche? Yeah. He's one of the most eminent Tibetan Nyingmapa lamas now living. And he's the only one of Sangharakshita's teachers who's still alive. And he's the enormous, hairy, yeti-looking guy, really very frightening, with intense gaze, apparently. I've not met him myself. Now in his 90s, living, I think, in Nepal. And I mention him because Tibetans, in particular, seem to find it very difficult to give up meat. But he's very keen on it. And in an interview a few years ago, he said, if you take meat, it goes against the vows one takes in seeking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Because when you take meat, you have to take a being's life. So I gave it up. From my experience, not eating meat has many benefits. I'm 88 years old, and ever since I stopped eating meat, I haven't had any major sickness. You know, you met these guys who say, I'm 88, I'm really well, look at me, I'm very fit. So he's a bit like that. When I sleep well. When I get up, I can walk right away. When I read religious texts, I can see them properly. I've got very good hearing, and I can listen attentively. These are the qualities I've experienced from not eating meat. I didn't get sick or die when I stopped eating meat. No negative consequences came to me. I can travel by vehicle, aeroplane or train without getting nauseous or dizzy, and I never get headaches. I'm a human being formed with flesh and blood like anyone else, and I'm proof that giving up meat doesn't make one ill, like many Tibetans seem to think. I'm telling you this from my own experience. Only good things happen to me from giving up meat. This is Chattel Rinpoche, Chettle Sangha Dorje. And he's been campaigning, actually, quite a lot in the expatriate Tibetan community to try and promote vegetarianism, and he's not the only one. So you might be surprised to hear this, but actually, I don't want to push anybody to be vegetarian. I honestly don't, myself. What I personally think is important is to have some ethical sensitivity. Do you know what I mean? to be ethically active in your life. That's what's really important. And I do realize that some people have other ethical priorities, and maybe for the present they don't want to make the effort to stop eating meat or animal products at this stage. In a way, they've got plenty on their plate, as it were, already. So I might feel disgustingly self-righteous about what I eat, but these other people that I know, they may be far kinder, they may be more engaged in alleviating all sorts of suffering than I am, but yet they haven't taken that particular ethical step of becoming vegetarian. What is really admirable, I think, about people is if they do have some ethical priorities, if they are developing their ethical sensitivity, they're looking at the impact they're having on other living beings and on the planet and on themselves as well. If you're looking at that's fantastic. And different people will make their decisions in different orders. Different people will have priorities. And I don't really think one can impose one's own priorities on others. It's very tempting to do so. You feel it's so obvious, it's so sort of sorted out. But it's really not like that, is it? It's never quite that simple. So I don't think I can make judgments myself about the ethical priorities that other people choose. Okay, so what I've been talking about is the effort to feel your connection with real individual animals, to have that sense of connection, and then what you can do for the sake of suffering and dying animals. Is there anything you can do for them? Do you want them killed so that you can eat them or not? So vegetarianism, I'm suggesting, is primarily for the sake of the animals, not so much for the sake of the vegetarian. And Buddhism would say, don't harm animals, even if it's in your interests to do so. So you may have a very good reason, but if you can possibly avoid it, Buddhism would say, just don't do it. And of course, loads of questions and issues come out of that. And I mentioned the numbers, that rather astonishing number of 48 billion per year, 48,000 million per year of animals. And then also the degree of suffering. There are two things there, there's death and suffering. And it's interesting, some people will say, well, what really matters is animal welfare. I think, is it the television cook Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall, is that his name? Who's a keen meat eater, but also very, very keen on looking after the welfare of animals. And that's very admirable, isn't it? But what that implies is that their death, you know, they're going to die anyway. Why don't we just kill them and eat them? You know, it's all right. You know, so, you know, that's an interesting argument, isn't it? But let's at least make their lives a happy one. A happy life, and then a little gentle shot to the head or something, and then we'll chop them up and eat them. And it's healthy. Vegetarianism is healthy. Animal products do spoil the planet in various ways. It's a human issue, it's not just a Buddhist issue. But for Buddhists, in a way, once you've decided on Buddhist ethics, it's a real thing to look at. It's an imperative. And the first principle of Buddhist ethics is abstaining from harming living beings. All beings are equally entitled to compassion. However, that little let-out clause at the end, it may be that vegetarianism or veganism is not your ethical priority. Okay, so I'd like to see what other people think about this. I've just sort of given you some ideas. I hope it doesn't feel too pressured. I don't want to do that. I've got my own views, and I'm sure you have yours. But I'm particularly interested in hearing people's experience. Would anyone like to contribute? Yes.